The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Thursday, December 13th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grain Field Marketing in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, a short extension of the 2002 Farm Bill is growing more likely. Also, Canada and Brazil say they'll renew their WTO complaint against U.S. subsidies. And an Informa study says higher corn prices have little to do with higher food prices. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, December wheat at $9.83, up 4. July, $8.32, down 22 and 3 quarters. CME Group wheat, December, $9.34, unchanged. March, $9.53 and a half, up 13. July, $8.07 and a half, down 21. December corn, 418 and 3 quarters, up 2. March, 435, up 1 and 3 quarters. May, 446, up 1 and 3 quarters. December, 450 and 3 quarters, up 1 and a half. January soybeans, 1146, down 5 and a half. March, 1166, down 4 and 3 quarters. May, 1179 and a half, down 3 and 3 quarters. November, 1054 and a half, down 9 and 3 quarters. December soybean meal, 321.20, up 170. January, 321.60, down 90. December soybean oil, 46, down 25. January, 46.26, down 43. December live cattle, 91.97 and a half, down 155. January feeders, 103.80, down 140. December lean hogs, 55.17, unchanged on the day. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grain Field Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Before we get over to the grains, let's begin over on the livestock side and ask you why were prices so much softer today?
Well, in the cattle side, we saw a dollar lower trade. Some 90-cent trade, futures at 95, so futures are holding a premium. And, two, we're taking a little bit of weather premium back out of the marketplace. But we feel this correction here could be bought. We're looking at tighter numbers as we go into 2008. We feel beef demand is going to remain strong. Look for export news to come out of the market right after the first of the year here. So we feel this correction is going to be shallow and short-lived. On the hog side equation, just a little lower there, just lower pork prices in general, spillover selling from the cattle side equation kept the market in check there late in the session. But overall, pork demand strong. We're looking at a record amount of pork coming to the marketplace, but yet, too, is being gobbled up fairly quickly. So the pork side is just going to be about like the cattle here as we get through these numbers and see a pretty good demand outlook as we go into 2008.
Let's turn our attention then to the grains, and we'll begin with the wheat, which I believe in the May contract hit an all-time high today, and I think March and May were also briefly up limit. Is this just a prelude to potential fireworks that we'll see tomorrow?
Well, we're going to see continued volatility in the old crop, especially with the tight global supplies, tight domestic supplies. There's ideas that we will run out of wheat before the end of the marketing year. So with that type of chatter around, it's going to keep the market on edge. And the market started a little soft and questioned on ideas that we saw some cancellation of soft red winter wheat up to 150,000 tons unknown, but the market was quick to come back. Going home this afternoon, talk of Egypt's back into the wheat market. So according to the export news, this market is going to move violently, you know, up and down. But the overall news this week has been the unloading of deliverable stocks out of Toledo. And from the commercial point of view, we were understanding that wheat probably sold at a good high levels in order to go ahead and move it out this time of year. And therefore, that suggests there's some willing buyers to pay up for it to get that wheat. So it's going to be sporadic. It's going to be a volatile market. If you look at the trading range, we're talking almost 50 cents from the high to the low. So that's quite a move if you can buy on the high and sell on the low. But if you're the opposite and get caught, it could hurt quite bad. As far as this new crop wheat goes, it was lower. There's probably spread activity, buying the old and selling the new. The world knows we got a lot more wheat acres. Especially in Europe, doing away with set-aside. Here in the U.S., the eastern wheat belt looks like a golf course out there. It's green. And the question is, what type of production number we're going to put on it. And until we get in this spring, it's also going to keep the new crop kind of choppy, but it probably won't follow as much as the old.
Then let's go ahead and turn our attention to soybeans, which made new contract highs today.
Yeah, we saw some higher energy prices. That helped the market earlier. Export inspections were good, total of about 972,000 tons, above expectations. Started out firm, but the bean market technically sort of reached some upside objectives. The front end here at this 1050 to 1060 with some targets got there and sort of ran out of buyers. Also, too, as we went late in the session, the South American forecast turned a little bit wetter, quarter to three-quarters of an inch on 70-75% coverage. That's not a huge amount, but it was enough sort of may say, well, maybe we can back and fill here a little bit. Technically, we did reverse down. We made a new high, close lower on fairly good volume. Now, the key or question is whether that follows through or not. So it would be the main topic as we go into Friday's close to see where we are at the close.
On continuation charts, if we draw an uptrend line through 1997 and 2004, you can see that today we broke to the upside of that objective, which was around 1152 and three quarters, and we certainly got there today. And as you say, follow through tomorrow. I guess the question that I have for you is this: with not much left to look at to the left of these charts, what kind of upside objectives might you be looking at, and how are you getting to them?
Well, you can figure short-term objectives by taking recent consolidation patterns and swinging them up. You can also draw different speed lines and use some Fibonacci follow-through on those. And the main thing is, though, when you look to your left, you got to go back to the early 70s. Or with that 1090, 1099 area, not 10, but 12, we were short of $13. And that's going to be the next upside target. As long as this producer mentality is to sort of hang on to some beans, and if there continues to be concern in the southern hemisphere, I wouldn't be surprised for the bean market to go up and challenge the upper $12 level and see what's up there.
Meanwhile, March corn continues its march up, and of course the contract high there at 443, and it doesn't seem like we're anywhere close to relenting onward down. Maybe is that an upside objective in traders' minds, new contract highs in the March?
Well, Deese is going to go off here Friday at 12 noon, so we're going to see March become the lead contract. There was some upside targets for lead contract to go to the 430. March corn closed at 435, so whether or not that's enough to fill that objective or not. Last high in the March corn was 439 back there in June. So that's going to be the benchmark on your chart to watch here over the next few weeks as we go into year end.
You mentioned that contracts are going off the board on Friday. A lot of analysts believe that there will be quite a bit of fireworks in the wheat, given what we've seen in the last few sessions. Other than the wheat, are we looking for an orderly removal at this point or not?
Well, that could be interesting. There in the mid-90s, wheat was supposed to go off quietly, and we saw wheat rally $2 in the last 10 minutes of trade. I mean, it ticked 5-10 cents every second, so it could get quite interesting as we get into that. The open interest has been winding down fairly orderly. We'll see what market brings tomorrow around noon, especially like you mentioned on the December wheat, not only in Chicago, but we got KC and Minneapolis. And that could be interesting to see if anybody's caught there to the last minute.
And a question from a listener, an email questions, wants to know from all of our analysts their thoughts on whether or not they feel that we're going to have a break in futures prices in February.
Well, short term in here, everybody wants the market to go down, and it's not doing it. So we'll probably see the market stay firm in the first of the year. Now, come February, everybody wants the market to go up. I mean, they want the market to be higher for the revenue policies and some of these insurance programs to guarantee or help lock in some higher levels. So market's going to do opposite of what you want. So I would say we're going to trend higher into the year end, and we'll probably do the old-fashioned February low routine.
Thank you much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He is in Normal, Illinois. Taking a look at the Tuesday forecast tonight in northern Indiana, cloudy with scattered flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 10 in far northwestern Illinois to 30 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow in northern Indiana, cloudy with scattered snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Highs ranging from 22 in far northern Illinois to 44 degrees in the far south. And a winter storm is heading in our direction for the weekend. The exact track is still in question as the storm hasn't developed yet. It will form over Colorado tonight and head to southwest Texas before heading northeastward toward the Tennessee and Ohio River valleys. Most of the precipitation will fall on Saturday and Saturday evening. In agricultural news, Brazilian and Canadian officials say they will renew their request for a World Trade Organization panel to determine if U.S. farm subsidies exceed approved WTO limits. Brazil and Canada claim the U.S. provided trade-distorting amber box subsidies above a spending limit of $19.1 billion between 1999 and 2002, as well as 2004 and 2005. A ruling against the U.S. would require Congress to bring subsidies into compliance, even if they've been reauthorized by the 2007 Farm Bill. A previous WTO panel found U.S. direct cotton payments belong in the amber box and not the green box, as the U.S. claimed. WTO analysts say the new case is likely to repeat that finding for corn. Key congressional leaders say they likely will extend the 2002 Farm Bill until mid-March while lawmakers complete work on the 2007 Farm Bill. The short-term extension probably will be part of an omnibus spending bill to be voted on by December 21st. It would not include 2002 commodity support programs for the 2008 crop year. Yesterday's Farm Bill debate covered just six of the 25 amendments that have been offered. New Hampshire Republican Judd Gregg introduced an amendment to cut a $5.1 billion disaster aid program.
But when you put in place a program which exists before the emergency occurs, all you're saying is, here's a bunch of money, folks. Come and get it. For every big windstorm that occurs in North Dakota, somebody's going to declare an emergency and try to get reimbursed for their mailbox that got blown over. Because the money is sitting there. It's that simple. It really is terrible policy to put this forward. You have absolutely set a floor. You know you're going to spend every year in this account, and you know it's going to go to four or five states. Because that's where the claims are made.
Rather than a permanent disaster fund, Gregg likes the status quo, ad hoc disaster assistance.
Much better is the approach we presently used, although not perfect, I admit to that, but much better is to identify when the emergency occurs, know what the costs were when the emergency occurs, and then pay those costs in order to reimburse the farm community that has been impacted, which is what we do, and we do it in a fairly prompt and efficient way around here, whenever there is such an event.
Gregg wants to use the savings for low-income energy assistance and deficit reduction. Yesterday, the Senate rejected a Farm Bill amendment that would have provided stress relief assistance to producers and struck down a provision that would have cut $15 billion in subsidies to asparagus farmers. U.S. and China officials have signed an agreement aimed at increasing the use of biofuels. The agreement between the U.S. Energy and Agriculture Departments and China's National Development and Reform Commission calls for voluntary sharing of scientific and technical information on producing biomass materials and in converting crops to fuel. It also would set up a bilateral dialogue on biofuels. It could take up to a week to restore power to rural areas of Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, Iowa, and Illinois in the wake of a winter storm. Gary Naylor is a University of Missouri Extension livestock specialist.
Many of our farms are reliant on power for either milking or feeding livestock or grinding feed. So when we don't have power, many times our farms come to a standstill. We either have to rely on standby generators or borrow generators from someone or something like that in order to keep the farm going. Because just because there is bad weather doesn't mean that livestock don't need to be fed or milked or whatever.
Oklahoma, Kansas, and Missouri have been named state disaster areas. The chairman of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee yesterday conceded final approval of a new energy bill will spill into the new year. Jeff Bingaman says, quote, "This place operates with two steps forward and one step back, and that may be what we're going to have to do this time." The centerpiece of the legislation remains higher CAFE standards for cars, SUVs, and light trucks to 35 miles a gallon by 2022. A new Informa study says there is just a weak correlation between higher corn prices and escalating food costs. Informa looked at two decades of consumer price index data, and CEO Bruce Scheer says the report should put the food-to-fuel debate to rest.
The study debunks the claim that the ethanol, corn ethanol expansion and associated increased corn demand has been the sole or even major source of consumer food price inflation. In fact, corn prices play a minor role in that equation.
Scheer says look beyond the U.S. border for the cause of higher U.S. food prices.
Namely, as we point out in the study, we're in an era of synchronous global expansion and growth, especially of new middle-income consumers all over the world. And so we're not operating on the same old commodity demand curves that we were just 5 and 10 years ago. So there's this global commodity expansion going on, of which corn is a part of. Corn prices have been influenced as well by lost wheat crops, particularly in Australia 2 years in a row and other places around the world, as well as other crop issues that have nothing to do with the U.S. corn situation.
Study details are available at www.informaecon.com. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thank you. Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Has these rallies in new crop future prices enticed producers to let go of some of their crop?
Yeah, we saw the bases since last Thursday. You know, we saw pretty steady until just the last couple of days here. And we've seen the bases a little bit weaker, especially on the corn side of things, because of that, because we're up over that $4 mark in a lot of areas. And in a lot of areas, we're over, you know, $4 by enough to about pay the storage. And same thing on the $11 beans. I know beans got up at least at one point during the day there to where a person could clear $11 after the storage today. But there's not a lot of beans out there to sell, really, it doesn't seem like.
And are producers beginning to do hedging on their new, and if so, how?
Yeah, I think that's, as far as the beans go, that's probably where more of the movement was seen this week, was on the new crop. And I think they're just looking at selling selling the cash bids for fall, and they got over $10 for fall beans this week, and that was kind of a watershed mark as well. So,
do you think producers ought to re-own new cash, new crop corn if they made some hedges?
Well, that's really such an individual decision, Dave. I don't necessarily want to put out a blanket statement. There's a percent sold that I would want to have coverage on after that. But I mean, if a person's sitting here 20 to 30% sold, I guess at this point I'm not too concerned about having that re-ownership right now.
What about your prices today?
January corn is 409, and we've got a lucky number on the January beans, 1107.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thanks, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Governor Ral Blagojevich's former chief fundraiser has been charged with income tax fraud in a federal indictment that accuses him of hiding more than $1 million in income. Christopher Kelly is a contractor who served as finance chairman of Blagojevich's first campaign in 2002. He was among three men indicted today on corruption charges relating to state government by a federal grand jury. The indictment contends Kelly used business funds to pay gambling debts. Kelly and a business associate together gave or loaned Blagojevich's campaign more than $600,000, and Kelly is believed to have raised far more than that for the Democratic governor. Blagojevich is the second consecutive Illinois governor whose administration has become the target of a major corruption probe. He has not been accused of any wrongdoing. An Urbana police detective says a woman whose body was found in Boneyard Creek in May would have had to have been pushed over a bridge railing in order to suffer the injury she did. A coroner's jury today ruled that Heather Montaigne's death was a homicide. Detective Dwayne Maxey says the 30-year-old woman struck an I-beam on her Race Street bridge before she fell into the creek, making her unconscious before she drowned. She had been fighting with her boyfriend, 41-year-old Curtis Collins, who claimed she fell off. Collins was arrested in Iowa last month on murder charges. He's in the Champaign County Jail on a $500,000 bond. A referendum to change the city of Urbana's voting system is off the February primary ballot. An electoral board determined today that supporters of instant runoff voting didn't have enough petition signatures because the referendum was supposed to be binding. One supporter says they could approach the city council to put it on the primary ballot or a future ballot. Indiana's governor has ordered state agencies to withhold spending 5% of their current budgets. An updated revenue forecast presented to the state budget agency forecasts Indiana will take in tens of million dollars less in tax revenue than expected over the current biennium. Members of a liberal political group visited congressional offices around the country today to deliver petitions against going to war with Iran. 15th District Congressman Tim Johnson's offices in Champaign and Bloomington were among those approached by representatives of MoveOn.org. They're asking Congress not to go along with any calls for military action against Iran. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
And I'm Dave Dickey, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Let's begin down in South America and start with Argentina. And let me ask you if it's fair to say that's pretty much a mixed bag these days.
Well, Dave, you're exactly right. You look at the situation across Brazil, and overall conditions are very, very good. We had one dry pocket remaining in southern Brazil earlier this week. That issue was solved with good rains across that region earlier this week. But the focus of attention is kind of coming on turning more so to Argentina, where we have more dry pockets around. And going forward over the next week to 10 days, we really don't see any kind of pattern that would be favorable for more widespread precipitation. Now, getting out beyond 10 days, there actually are some hints here that have begun to arise in some of the computer model guidance over the past couple of days, indicating a better pattern for rainfall, kind of starting around the Christmas holiday. So that's really the focus of attention. And certainly they're going to need rains to develop at that point to resolve some of the dryness. But at this time, the dryness is not any kind of major issue. It's more so a minor issue, but that is the focus of attention in the short term.
Turn your attention to the corn and soybean belt then as we wind on toward the weekend.
Yeah, well, looking out ahead here, really we're monitoring here a storm system that's going to be developing across the southern plains here during the day tomorrow and tomorrow night. That will begin to work its way into the southern portion of the Midwest Saturday, wrapping up on Sunday across our far eastern U.S. And looks like most of the precip is going to be in the form of snow across the region. But getting out beyond that system looks relatively quiet for several days, with maybe another system late next week. But overall, you know, the real storminess and cold weather, such as what we've seen over the past week to 10 days, that's gradually easing here as we head towards the Christmas holiday.
Probably improvements for the hard red winter wheat belt, I would think, over the last week or so.
Yeah, certainly our big, ice storm in certain areas of the southern plains and snow and rain and other areas, that helped improve some of your dryness, especially in areas of Oklahoma, Texas, which were the driest areas, but that also expanded into western Kansas as well. And so we did see some relief from the dryness, and really is debatable. Now it's a matter of debatable whether that precip actually improved things, just because your crop is kind of in a semi-dormant state here, and that is a question. Was the moisture good enough here to at least help the crop here before it goes fully dormant?
Thank you much, Mark.
My pleasure, Dave.
Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, providing independent commodity and financial analysis to clients throughout the United States. Risk Management Commodities Incorporated has offices located in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
And that's today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can subscribe by podcast to the show. Just go to our website at willag.org and click on the podcast link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.